Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Coming up later this hour, we begin an April series on the changing face of New York City. What is this city now after 10 years of an all-out building boom? And, of course, that has kind of come to a halt. But we will contrast the Time Warner Center with the Hearst Building and some of the old and new face of the Lower East Side. And we'll take your calls on the new building with the most impact in your neighborhood. It's a good time with this pause in development in New York City forced by the recession to kind of take stock of where we are as a physical city now and what it means to our lives. So that's coming up later in the hour. But first, after a special election near Albany yesterday, it's a tie. The election was to see who would replace Kirsten Gillibrand in the House of Representatives, and it was seen as a swing district showdown over the Democratic and Republican responses to the economy. Of course, Gillibrand was the upstate House member who was appointed by Governor Patterson to fill Hillary Clinton's Senate seat. So who won? Well, literally, it is too close to call. It's like 77,000 to 77,000 within about 60 votes. And so far, the Democrat, Scott Burphy, seems to have that tiny edge over the Republican, James Todisco. But there are thousands of absentee ballots yet to count, and that's going to take a while. So joining me to look more closely at the campaign, where we are this morning, and what it means, even in national context, is Irene Liu, political writer at the Albany Times Union and blogger for Capital Confidential up there. Hi, Irene. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
First, tell our listeners downstate here more about this district. Where is it exactly? I see on the map that it makes kind of a funny outline of three-quarters of Albany, not in Albany, but southeast and north of Albany. So what is it? Where is it? Who lives there?
It is the classic example of a gerrymandered district. It snakes all the way from the Hudson Valley all the way up to the Adirondacks in New York. It's kind of snakes around this and makes a number of twists and turns, really to make it a Republican district. As of the last election, the Republicans have more than a 70,000 voting advantage in terms of voter enrollment, although there are a number, it's about sort of one-third independent voters as well. Generally, it's been considered a conservative district. It had been held by Republicans for decades, up until for a number of years, up until 2006, when Kirsten Gillibrand beat John Sweeney, the Republican, and took the seat to the Democrats.
And who are the candidates? Democrat Scott Murphy is new to the area and to politics. People down here don't know that name. They also don't know, in the New York City area, James Todisco, the Republican, even though I know he's very well known in Albany.
Sure. Scott Murphy, the Democrat, as of 8 weeks ago, was pretty much a political unknown anywhere in New York. He is originally from Columbia, Missouri. He went to Harvard on the East Coast, and then spent some time working politics in Missouri before moving to New York City and then moving up to the district. He married Jennifer Hogan, a woman from the district. She has a sort of large, sprawling family up in near Glens Falls, which is north of Albany. And he pretty much has settled in the area as of 3 years ago. He's had some involvement in politics. He was an aide to a couple of governors in Missouri before moving to New York. But, in New York, in terms of politics, no one knew who he was. He is a wealthy person. He's a venture capitalist. And one of the reasons why he was initially chosen from the Democrats was that he was willing to put up his own money. He loaned his campaign $250,000 from the start. But since then, in the past 2 months, has raised a significant amount of money, more money than actually Todisco. The Republican Jim Todisco is the Assembly Minority Leader. He is, very well known, especially in Albany, because of he's been this sort of very vocal, very successful opposition leader in the Assembly. Now, the Assembly has a supermajority for the Democrats, and so generally the Assembly minority, the Republicans, don't have a lot of power here. But he has, you know, in his years as Assembly Minority Leader, really used the bully pulpit successfully, mm-hmm. and, you know, challenged, sort of was out there challenging Eliot Spitzer when he was governor on a number of issues, especially illegal driver's licenses. So he's well known in the district.
Thank you. And I call this a swing district because even though the Republicans hold a sizable advantage in registrations, Kirsten Gillibrand, who was a Democrat, had won the last two congressional elections, and Obama won there after, I believe, Bush had won there twice. So it really is a swing district. Is it kind of a classic swing district in national context?
It's interesting. I think that, to be honest, right now it's still a little too soon to tell whether or not it's a district that, you know, I mean, everyone's been talking about how this district is a bellwether for national trends and all these other things. I think that what this reflects, number one, is in 2006 when Kirsten Gillibrand first took office, she you know, had the benefit of a candidate who had some last-minute weaknesses in terms of scandals related to, you know, alleged domestic violence in his home and other things, and she took that in a very close race. In 2008, she did, however, sweep. She beat the Republican Sandy Treadwell by a stunning margin of, I believe, 63-37%. And so, you know, the Obama trend, it's still unclear. I mean, there are a large number of independents in the district, and a lot of people are saying now, well, you know, the district is likely changing. Whether or not it continues to go in that direction, I think we'll have to see in a few years.
Now, I want to play, before we talk about the national implications of this race and how they're going to break the tie up there, and, you know, the mind boggles thinking how they break ties in elections these days. But here are a couple of campaign ads. First, here's one for the Democrat, Scott Murphy, which goes after Assembly Leader Todisco.
26 years in Albany, and politician Jim Todisco's learned every trick in the book. Take credit for creating jobs the press revealed he didn't really have a lot to do with. And now Todisco won't tell voters where he stands on the recovery plan to cut taxes and create jobs, saying he didn't read the bill because he's not a speed reader. Jim Todisco, typical politics we just can't afford. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
All right, classic negative ad against an entrenched politician who's been there a while. And here's an anti-Murphy ad run by Todisco and company. Now, this one is an actual conversation that they took from a radio show. This is Scott Murphy being interviewed by conservative talk show host Fred Dicker on his Albany radio show about the death penalty for terrorists. Now, picture the series of mugshots that are in this ad, mugshots of terrorists flashing by on the screen while we hear this interview excerpt.
So if the terrorists who, say, destroyed the World Trade Center in the 9/11 attack had been captured, you don't think they should have faced the death penalty even though they killed some 3,000 people?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, it's a tough issue, but I think
Why is it a tough issue?
Well, because I think that we so often deal with cases where the evidence may not be totally conclusive and we can't prove for beyond any shadow of a doubt that that we don't
That's
have
not the legal
that we could
standard.
Come up with later. And also I think that the cost is just not accurate for it.
Okay, so you would be against
the death penalty.
It's so much
more costly than putting someone away that it's a big expense.
Okay. So you're against the death penalty for terrorists?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Irene Liu from the Times Union. You know, what I love about playing television ads on the radio is that you really get to hear things like that ominous drumbeat that you might not notice if you're distracted by the visuals. So that was a pretty ominous ad. And does it show Scott Murphy to be somewhat of a novice at this? Because even though he's against the death penalty in all situations, you know, which is a stand that many Democrats have taken, he kind of got cornered there into saying, yes, I'm against the death penalty for terrorists.
Well, it's interesting because I'm not actually certain whether that ad ran on television. I mean, unless you have better information.
No,
than I
do. Think that was an online ad. Actually, I think that was a web ad.
Yep. I mean, that ad is a very good example about of how these independent expenditures in the case of those two ads from the national parties, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee for the anti-Tedisco ad and the National Republican Congressional Committee for the anti-Murphy ad, how they're taking specific issues and trying to, you know, hammer home. As with, you know, most elections, especially special elections, the independent expenditures sort of go a little bit farther than the campaigns are willing to go. And, you know, I mean, in this case, to be honest, it's unclear to me how much impact that the 9/11 ad actually had, because it was a web-only ad.
Now let's talk about the national implications of this, because from what I've read, the National Republican Organization decided to make this a test case on their new party leader, Michael Steele, who really came out. And eventually, after wavering on the stimulus bill, Tedisco decided to make it a test case on the popularity of Obama's stimulus because the Republican came out against it. Can you tell if this is a referendum, really, on President Obama?
It's interesting. I think, you know, in politics, perception is reality, I suppose, and certainly this will be spun, depending on the outcome, by both national parties as a bellwether for, you know, for the GOP, perhaps a bellwether on how the Obama era is over. For, you know, the Democrats, if Murphy wins, it is a referendum on the federal stimulus and Obama's policies. You know, on a practical level, I think that, you know, those issues certainly had a significant, you know, impact on the discourse throughout this very, very short 8-week campaign. So what happens is, Tedisco was certainly, he was beaten up pretty badly, actually, in the press and among voters and by Murphy for not taking a stand on the federal stimulus for a number of weeks. I think that certainly hurt him. The campaign moving forward, I mean, right now, what was interesting to me was looking at the polls that kind of went throughout the district. The arc of the 8-week campaign was when you started off with a lot of, you know, support for federal stimulus package, and then you had the AIG sort of flap on a national level. And meanwhile, throughout this whole period, Obama's favorability in the district remained at 65%. Literally no change from the beginning of the campaign to the end of the campaign. And so if one is supposed to take this as a referendum on the Obama on Obama and his policies, you know, throughout that period, it didn't look like in the district things had really changed for him. You know, whether you can then have that applied, you know, second and third hand to Murphy and or Tedisco is another question. Certainly it's going to be spun that way, and it's informed a lot of the discourse on a national level. On the local level, really, as with any special election, this was about turnout. Certainly I think that one could say that Murphy defied expectations in the campaign. I mean, very few people knew who he was, knew his name 8 weeks ago, and the fact that he, you know, drew with Tedisco on the election day is certainly an achievement in terms of defying expectations.
Did you see, Irene, I'm curious, any polling on the issue of the stimulus package and whether it was popular? Were voters in the district polled about that specifically, not just Obama's personal popularity?
No, actually, they weren't. In the polls that were done by the Siena Research Institute, they really focused on favorability in the district, what the issues were that were of most concern for voters, and certainly the economy was at the top of the list by far. In the beginning, you saw that Tedisco, and I think in the first poll, you saw that Tedisco was considered stronger on the issue of the economy as well as a number of issues. But over time, that eroded, and Murphy began, by the second poll, I think 2 weeks later, 4 weeks before Election Day, people had believed that Murphy was actually stronger on the economy. And I think a lot of it was a result of the fact that Tedisco would not take a stand on the stimulus.
And how will they resolve this now that it's 77,000 to 77,000? There's an absentee ballot count that needs to take place, and then maybe recounts.
Absolutely. Right now, there are, as of yesterday morning, there were 5,907 absentee ballots that had been returned to the State Board of Elections. They are still receiving absentee ballots. All of them had anyone who wanted to fill out an absentee ballot had to have had it postmarked by March 30th, but now by Monday, basically. And Now, as a result, they are now looking to continue to collect absentee ballots. Regular absentee ballots need to be returned by April 7th, overseas ballots by April 13th. And so the results, regardless of the outcome, will not be certified officially by the State Board of Elections at least until after April 13th.
So,
but given how close this is, it may take weeks. I mean, who knows, possibly even months if it continues to be close.
Look what's been going on with Al Franken and Norm Coleman in Minnesota that's still not really resolved. And this
exactly.
is just the kind of fun you guys need in Albany, right? You
oh,
Albany
yes.
journalists? Because there's not enough, gridlock up there that you're going to need this recount, too.
Well, we joke that Governor Patterson certainly chose an interesting date to have the election, you know, the day before the budget was due, as well as, you know, to have the special election. It just kept us all very busy. There have been a lot of sleepless nights here.
And so before you go, yesterday was the last chance for an on-time state budget because it's due midnight, the morning of April 1st every year, so it's a little bit late. And the Senate got sidetracked with things like a resolution in praise of a dance marathon fundraiser held by the South Glens Falls High School. I'm very much for that as well. But the MTA deal is also reported to be falling apart after it had fallen apart and then was maybe coming together again with a payroll tax. What's the last there?
As of now, the Senate is on track, it looks like, to be voting on the budget. Yesterday, there was a delay because the Senate GOP needed to review some school runs. In addition to that, one of the Democratic senators fell ill. Senator Hassel Thompson from New York, she actually was diagnosed with walking pneumonia, but she came in the evening to attend. And, of course, with thin margin, the Democrats needed her to be able to vote on the budget to pass it because the Republicans have said that they did not vote in support of the budget in the bill yesterday. As far as the MTA goes, I mean, the Senate Democrats are still, you know, gaining footing, and it's a very, very, very diverse conference. So there are many, many different priorities among the individual members. So we'll stay tuned.
And nothing on the MTA bailout. The latest in the tabloids today, it says there might be a 50-cent tax or fee, I guess, per ride in New York City taxis to help fund the MTA service, you know, so they won't have to institute those draconian service cuts and fare hikes. Anything on that?
I think as of now, everything's still in flux. A number of suburban Democratic senators have now voiced their own concerns about various aspects of the MTA bailout plan, specifically payroll taxes, which they are concerned will affect their school districts. So, you know, it's ongoing, and as of now, I don't think that they don't have a resolution.
All right. More fun times in the capital of political dysfunction, Albany, New York. Irene Liu from the Albany Times Union. And let's see, where's your blog? Where can people find your blog?
If you go to blogs.timesunion.com/capital with an O.
Irene, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.